You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we won't point out how racist and sexist this season is. Watch your back, Lucy. If you enjoy your trip into the midside today for Survivor, be sure to check out our flagship show, Welcome to the Midside. You can find that on themidside.com, or you can subscribe on iTunes or any sort of streaming site like Stitcher, any sort of podcast site you should be able to find it on. But for now, we're going to talk about the game of Survivor, the show of Survivor. Joining me this trip via Skype from the hipster capital of the world, actor and Survivor superfan, George Nicolaitis. George, how are you doing today? It's exciting to have you on the show.
Hello there. Thanks for asking me. I'm pretty fired up from the debate. So if I cut you off, I'm just going to apologize ahead of time.
Now, this is the VP debate, right?
It is. It's a little snooze fest, but it was fun to watch.
But watching the VP debate versus watching the presidential debate, what two seasons of Survivor would you compare those to? Because the VP debate, is that more like Guatemala? And then, like, the presidential debate is more like a shit show of a season, like Nicaragua?
I was thinking more Nicaragua. I was thinking you have, a couple of people that don't know what the hell is going on.
For the presidential debate, right?
Right. And in the final three from that season, too. It was a clusterfuck of a season, for sure.
I think we can say this presidential campaign is the worst final two ever.
Yeah. This is like, I don't know.
Isn't America? Sandra and Lil, yeah. Well, but that's better in retrospect. But isn't America now considering moving to a Final Three? Isn't that kind of what we're doing as a culture?
Yes. Yes, we are. That's the direction that we're going in. This season's shaping up for me. I'm enjoying it so far.
Are you referring to the presidential season or the Survivor season?
The Survivor season. The Survivor season is the only thing that could take my mind off the shit show that is currently the presidential season.
Yeah, when we're talking about voting, I think I care more about who votes in tribal council this fall than I do who votes for which candidate.
That's a very fair thing to say, for sure.
So let's talk a little bit about this season, and let's get into the strategy. And there are two basic things going on, right? One in each tribe. They've kind of simplified the edit down on either tribe. And we'll get into that when we go into the story a little bit, too. And sort of some bones I have with the story. As you know, if you listen to the first episode, you saw Mario and I took the edit last season to task a little bit. And I see a little bit of worrisome stuff this season. We'll get into that in a minute. But in the simplification of the edit, there's two basic strategic things going on here. And first, I want to talk about the Gen X tribe. And what happened with that is something that often makes people wonder if the game is rigged. And that's David, the weakest member of the tribe, who was given the edit of, you know, basically being in over his head, finding the idol and then suddenly being allied with a good player. You know, Ken, who wasn't even in the first episode, is not just a model. He's a smart, athletic model. And suddenly things have turned around for them. So is this a case of David happened to just find the idol, or is this producer interference, or what was your impression of all that was going on the Gen X tribe strategically?
Well, I think that there were a lot of little clues in the episode that was pointing toward David making it very far. But the question is, do I think it's rigged and they're trying to... I don't think so. I like to think that it's not rigged, even though it probably is. But I really like watching the story unfold. I like watching the characters. I think that, like was mentioned in the previous podcast with Mario, that you know David is kind of like this season's Suri or this season's Holly. I think that was mentioned, and I totally agree. I think that. David is quite literally pushing boulders to the fire. He's successfully pushing the heavy, insurmountable boulder against all odds. You remember when he was like putting those rocks around the fire? I think this.
I think calling those rocks is generous. I think they were a little bit more like pebbles.
No, but for him they were tough to get around, and they were showing him struggling, and it's like David versus Goliath, and Goliath is the game. I think they're setting us up to watch him because he's going to have that big turnaround story. He's probably going to be a power player at some point. I see him going very far, and I usually root for the underdog. I rooted for Cochran, and I was one of the few people who was probably happy when he won. But I think that David and I believe model guy Blue Underwear. I know them by their underwear.
Is this the point where I should point out that you're gay? Should I let the audience in on that? That's why you know them by their underwear.
Yes, I know them by their underwear. I don't know any of the girls' names. Fuck them. No, Ken.
I already said Ken's name. Ken the model.
Ken, right. Ken.
As if we fucking needed a male model named Ken, right? Like, so obvious of a name.
Right, but I like that he's not your typical male model. I like that he's not like Jeff from Palau or JC. I like that he's like admitting his insecurities and that's why I think it's a perfect pairing between him and David. And I think that those two are the ones to be reckoned with. I think that I kind of think that this, I know that you want to get to this probably later, the shakeup. I think that it's going to be a swap of sorts. I think there's going to be different color rocks and half of them have to go there and the other half have to go, whatever, that something along those lines. And my hope, because these are the ones that I'm watching, I'm really watching. I like Michaela. There's something about this girl that she sees the truth in what's going on in her tribe, along with Zeke as well. Zeke is definitely somebody who is on the pulse and sort of commenting on the what's the word I'm looking for? The kind of the insanity that's going on there. He feels like an outsider because he's not, he doesn't really identify with that group of that age group with the millennials. So it's fun to watch him and Michaela sort of like give everybody the side eye of like what's going on. So I'd like to see a tribe shakeup. This is my ideal tribe shakeup. I'd like to see Michaela and Zeke along with David and Ken. I'd like to see those four somehow meet up, fate aligns. There's no way of predicting this, but it's just something I was thinking about. I'd love to see those four work together because they seem to be the ones that are on the pulse in the Gen X tribe and the other two with the millennials. So I think that they're just going to watch everybody self-destruct for a little while and then they're going to make some big power moves, especially with that idol.
So I'm guessing it sounds like that you like David and Ken and you like the pairing of the two of them. And they're two of your favorite players.
I like that the beginning of this. I'd like to see where it can go and who they can drag in and who, you know, they can work with. But I do tend to root for the underdog. And it's very rare that I could root for a model who I consider an underdog because he seems to need to really get through some of his personal issues, you know, along with playing this crazy game. So I think that he's going to be one to watch, and it just so happens that it's really easy to watch him. I'm just going to say that. I'm going to leave that out there.
Well, you raise an interesting point when you talk about Ken, and it really shows sort of – it's revealing of the editing of the show because if they had put his story in episode one, it almost would have been like a winner's story because he's situated right in between. I mean, the thing I find interesting about him is what you just said is he's sort of the underdog because of the way he's portrayed with his psychology. And psychologically, I found myself identifying with him in the sense that he was all about not being able to show his true self, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That was what he was talking about. Because you watched it more recently than me. Do you want to just remind us a little bit?
Just say that one more time. Yeah, rewind it a little bit.
No, yeah.
Because I didn't get the gist of the question.
Yeah, I'm saying that remind us a little bit about what Ken was talking about, like what his psychological issues are and what he's always dealt with. It was about not being able to show him his true self, correct?
It was along those lines. It was more about him not being able to open up and see by him seeing David open up, it was allowing him to sort of say, okay, I can do this too. And I think that, you know, we don't know what it's like to be out there, of course, but I think that if you feel that way about yourself and you have an opportunity to run into somebody else who is even more neurotic than you, but is actually assimilating to the extreme circumstances, I think that that's a very powerful connection that a person can make out there. And I think that that could take it pretty far.
Yeah, and that's really underestimated on the show. We touched on this a little bit last week with Mario, too, is, you know, people see it as such a numbers game, and it's just like, oh, we need to vote this person out, blah, blah, blah. There's something to be said for who you get along with and just playing the game with them and seeing how far you can get with them, because you actually have to live with these people for 24-7. And that's, you know, sort of what I don't understand about what happened on the Millennial Tribe. Is I don't understand anything that happened at that tribal council. Maybe it's just because the edit threw me for a loop, and we'll talk about that, you know, in a couple seconds here when we talk about the story. But you mentioned Michaela and Zeke. And specifically what I did not understand is, why the fuck would you be aligned with someone that you're just yelling at and berating at tribal council? I don't understand why Michaela is aligned with the Triforce, with the Showmance couple, if she's just going to yell at Figgy at Tribal Council. That doesn't make any sense to me. If you're going to yell at somebody like that, all you're doing is alienating them, and then you're going to vote alongside them?
Right, yeah. It doesn't seem like she's going about her feelings for Figgy in the smartest possible way. I think that she's... I think there might be a lot more to it than we're seeing with the dynamics between those people, because we don't really know. Besides the fact that she was snuggling up with Malcolm 2.0.
I think he's Malcolm 0.5. I think he's a lesser, watered-down version of Malcolm. Let's not insult Malcolm here.
But wait, let's put it out there. When Malcolm first played, he had Angie. And Angie got voted out because of the relationship that he had with Angie. So she was gone in that scenario. Now you see... Taylor, right?
I guess. I don't know. I don't remember. Fuck, yeah. I don't care.
Taylor and Figgy sort of doing the same thing, and Taylor realizing, oh, shit, I'm making the same mistake that people in the past have made. So we'll see what happens with that. But I see the parallels between Taylor and Malcolm in that respect, in that he's sort of playing the game and being the pretty boy right now and hasn't really started playing the game. He's just socializing. So I think that if he gets smart in this situation, he can possibly go far if he can find a way in, but the damage may already be done for him. I think
you would think, and maybe it's just the edit leading us that way, but
could be.
You know, they seem to be setting up that the tables were going to be turned on the popular kids and everything, but then everyone voted with them. So why do you think they voted with the Triforce and what's the girl, the girl's name, the Christian girl who voted with them, the missionary?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you why. This is my assumption. I think it's like high school. You got these young minds sort of gravitating toward the popular people, sort of letting them lay down the groundwork and letting them take control, and in fear of not being accepted, possibly. You have a couple of seemingly... misfits, Hannah being one of them. Everyone seems to get a kick out of her. She's like the Gilligan of her tribe. But you know, with the coconut, and I think that there are a lot of people who are, you know, really, they cast it really well, I feel. And I think I forgot my train of thought where I started with this. I'm sorry.
Well, I think what you're talking about is you're basically arguing that this vote was more psychological than it was strategic. You're saying that it was more about this yearning for fitting in and acceptance than it was about what's going to put us in the best position.
which was why it was very interesting. And this is why I fucking love Jeff Probst, and I can't say enough good things about him, even though a lot of people have a lot of bad things to say about him.
No, Jeff Probst is a heroic figure here in the mid-side, so you are safe in saying that.
All right, good. Because I think that in the past, Jeff has, you know, it's been sort of difficult for him at times to find the balance between host and instigator. And all of that happens, at Tribal Council for the most part. I think that the way he handled the fact that there was an entire conversation going on that was like changing the entire way that Tribal Council was going to go, he ignored that for the most part. And he wound up not really saying anything until it was brought up that the conversation was going on. He let them play that out, whereas in the past, I don't think he would have jumped on that. But he waited for the right opportunity, knowing that what was going on was going to, of course, change the vote. And you had Hannah in the corner just sort of dying 100 deaths on the corner of that tribal council with, ironically enough, Mari commenting, oh, she's probably just talking about lollipops and gumdrops and puppy dogs. Meanwhile, the girl was contemplating getting rid of her and ultimately wound up doing so.
But that's what's so interesting to me about all of it is I would think in a more mature game that what Mari said was the right thing to say. Show confidence in your ally. Don't call them out. But it's almost like the whole thing was so childish that Mari should have called out Hannah, because Hannah was basically being trapped in the corner and emotionally manipulated, and she was responding emotionally. So yeah. Mari, by being more mature and sort of doing the like trusting your ally thing, it almost bit her in the butt by doing that.
Totally. Yeah, and I think that Hannah just didn't want to appear weak in front of the cool kids. She has a lot more to prove in that group, I would say, just aesthetically speaking, because, she's sort of a misfit, but everyone seems to love her. But she seems to be trying very hard to keep up with the Joneses over there.
I don't disagree with you, but yeah. For the sake of conversation, do you think there's an element of being threatened by Mari here? You know, if we're talking about high school and everything, isn't high school a time when people especially go after people like Mari and try to make them unpopular because of their abilities?
Yeah, I've witnessed that. I've definitely witnessed that, and I think that that's probably ultimately is a really wise move for that group. But I think it's to be seen what's going to happen with this. I just hate saying Figgy, but Figgy and Malcolm 5.0.
So 5.0, Jesus, I called him 0.5. You just really like Taylor.
I keep making it better and better. I did mean 0.5.
5.0. I would argue that Malcolm's a worse version of Joe, if anything.
See, I feel like Joe's a watered down version of Malcolm, and I think that we're just talking about sex appeal, but that's a whole other story.
What? I am not attracted to either of them. I just like Joe better as a person. He's more entertaining to me.
I wasn't assuming that you were attracted to either one of them. I know what side your bread is buttered on, JML.
Well, they're voting out where my bread is buttered.
That's right. Yep.
I'm left with Lucy, who looks angry all the time.
It's funny. My brother is funny. He's not a Survivor watcher, but I recently got my 9-year-old nephew into Survivor, and he's a fanatic now. And he watched the premiere with my father, and he was like, at the end of my brother, with his father, and he called me at the end of the episode. He was just kind of dismissive about it. He was like, listen, they voted off the one with the best chest, so I'm done.
The 9-year-old said that?
Oh, God, no, he's not there yet. My brother, who's a casual Survivor, is like, yeah, they voted out the one with the best rack, so I'm out.
Yeah, they definitely did that, but that was not a real rack, I don't think.
Oh, no, there was some, fiber optics in there, cables and plastic and bionics, but yeah. She was, sure.
And then they voted out the other Asian this week. I don't know, man. I don't know. Lucy's just gonna, if you're Lucy, you're gonna just wonder what's going on, you know?
But here's something I want to ask your opinion on. This is something that I was thinking of when I was watching the episode. Do they recruit players when they, you know, people that don't really send in tapes? Do they recruit them, people who don't know the game, purposely, so they can like fall into the same makes for good TV category when they make the same stupid mistakes that people have done in the past, people have made in the past? Do you think that they bank on that, or are they hoping for these people to sort of, you know, come up with new shit? Because I just feel like they recruit these people who are seem so clueless as to how the game should be played.
Well, from a production standpoint, you don't want everyone who knows, you don't want every player to know how to play the game. That's not good TV. To a certain extent, I think it would be fascinating to watch, because there's also the element of you want to cast people who know how to play but know how to play differently. That's part of the issue right now, even within the fan community, is there's such a uniformity of what people believe is the right way to play, and they try and expose that and play on that. So that, yeah, they try to cast, and it's not just casting. When you're putting together an entire cast, a group of people, you're not just casting individuals, you're casting how they play off of one another. So there definitely was an element of these things we're talking about with Hannah and Mari and Taylor and Figgy, putting them all together on purpose because that's what they see would happen. You know, when they came up with the theme, they found these people to not only represent the theme but work together in this way. And I don't mean work together as in collaborate. I mean as in character types and psychologies and all of those things.
Sure.
So I think they have a basic idea. I think part of the reason the edit is always so successful is I think they have a basic idea of where they're going to go with each character before the season even starts. And then they just sort of see how it plays up on screen and what the end result is. Some characters are duds. Some aren't. Some surprise them. And like you said, they do have a certain extent where they want people to surprise them with moves and things like that. Like, I don't know if they expected what to happen at Tribal to happen at Tribal with the backing Hannah into a corner and, you know, going after her like that. But they certainly let that happen because it's unique and it's new and it made it more interesting to do. Just like they, you know, Probst encouraged Michaela to yell at Figgy. He kept pushing that button because that makes it more interesting from a story standpoint.
I have to agree with you.
And let's talk about the story a little bit now, because what I think a lot of people don't realize about reading comprehension in general, and this is a form of reading comprehension when you're reading a story, is when you're in the first chapter or the first few chapters, it's very hard to know what the actual theme is and what the story's about. So that's why I don't like to make predictions. I just like to say who's having good edits, because something can always happen, like what happened. I thought Mari was getting a good edit, and she was getting a positive edit, but she wasn't getting a winner's edit. She was getting a good edit because they wanted to set up this surprise blindside. Because anyone who I think is more intelligent and mature wanted her to stay. I mean, did you want her to go or to stay?
I didn't want her to go. I wanted her to stay, for sure. I thought that her narrative was, whenever she was doing her confessionals, I thought were, you know, spot on, and she had a good pulse on what was going on. I did want her to stay. I wanted Figgy to stay too for some reason. I didn't want either one of them to go. I don't know. Like I just kind of like them as characters. So when they go, it's like, okay, they're gone. Let's see who really will emerge as the characters in this episode. But I think that the story, like you said in the beginning, it's fairly simple. It's a simple delivery. They're really banging home the theme, which is the millennials versus the Gen X. That's what you see. You see millennials as dreamers. I think Taylor referred to it as a, you know, I'm a dreamer. And that is just sort of lax. And then you have the Gen X who are practical and focused. And I think that the story is which ideology will prevail, which sort of, you know, method or philosophy will make it on top. Do you have to be practical and focused in order to win the game, or can you just kind of drift through like a Fabio and then start, you know, winning challenges when it really counts towards the end? Not when it always really counts, but like in those last few.
Right. You know. Each challenge gets more important as the season goes on. Right. That's exactly what you're saying. So then the idea of like a character being balanced might not mean as much this season, because when you look at someone like Mari, who is more balanced, that was ultimately shown to be her detriment. where she was being more practical and she was trying to play the game, they were showing that millennials go with their emotions more and go with their heart more, and that's what hurt her.
Yep, absolutely, 100%. And then in the challenge as well, you could see the divide, and the youth had the stamina. The millennials had the stamina to get them to the mat first, start flinging the hoops. But the focus and the patience won Gen X the reward, you know, in the end. So I think that we're going to see a back and forth with this for a while of which philosophy is going to work. Are the millennials going to start playing the game a lot more focused and practical, and is Gen X going to learn to relax? But still win the game and sort of like go with the flow a little bit more. So it's really going to be interesting to see which one of these ways of thinking prevails. To me, anyway.
Yeah, and it will definitely be. I definitely agree with that. And do you think there was a setup of which ideology is ultimately going to prevail? Because I thought in the first episode the millennial tribe got more of a bet. I got that they had more of a positive edit. I thought they had more of the, because usually you can tell which tribe's going to come out on top. And I thought it seemed more like the millennial tribe was going to come out on top. So does that mean a more emotional, self-involved sounds so negative, but I don't mean it that way. I don't mean it negative. A more emotional, self-involved player is going to win?
It's tough to say. It's tough to say because you have it's tough to say at this early. They have this big tribe swap or whatever is coming up that's probably going to throw a wrench in everything. So everything just might change. So I don't. It's too early to tell. I think, but you know, one person who I think, I don't know why, I don't know what it is about him, but he's not Paul. He's not the outspoken guy telling everybody what to do.
Before we get to who you're going to say, let's talk about Paul for a second. Because when you're saying it's too early to say, there's such good evidence all over the place. And I thought such a great piece of evidence as for someone being a potential winner was Paul's collapse and his recovery. Because the way that was edited and the quotes that he was given were so strong. I mean, it seemed like a heart attack. He seemed like he was out of it. But then when he came back, it was all of this, like, I'm going to win now. I know I'm going to win. Everything's fine. And before, when he was falling and collapsing, Ken and David were celebrating a little bit. Like, oh, God, this is it. Do you remember any of the things Paul said when he recovered?
I don't remember what he said. I just remembered that I wouldn't have been upset if he was I would hope he was going to be okay, but you know, I wouldn't have missed him from the game. I don't think they gave him enough. I think that him having the issue on the beach was, you know, with the heart was, I don't know. I feel like that was, the first time I really got to know him. I didn't see that. I have to rewatch it because I rely on you. I mean, as far as like the editing and the analysis of the editing, I could have my own like thoughts about it, but sometimes you say things that I'm just like, you really shed light on it. That's like your specialty. But that's why I just I have to watch that again and see if that was a winning edit because I don't know yet. Is it usual by this point? There's a pretty clear final contender for you. Do you feel like, by two episodes in?
I mean, it's hard to tell. That's part of what we talked about. Like last season was clearly edited around tie, and he didn't win. But if you can pick it out, there you can usually figure out a few people. That's why I'm just kind of I don't like to make winner predictions anymore because as we've talked about here, there's so many variables and there can even be a bad edit. And if it's a bad edit, then you can't predict who's going to win. But I do like to talk about moments like this because I think they're important and they play into the overall story. So you said not Paul on that tribe. Who are you going to mention on this tribe with having a good edit?
Is his name Fred?
I don't think there's a Fred on the show.
There's no Fred?
No, not as far as I know.
there needs to be a Fred. If there has never been a Fred, there needs to be a Fred. Who's the big guy who's on the
You're talking about Brett from Boston?
Is his name Brett?
Yeah, Brett, the guy, the cop from Boston.
Sure. I think that he's one. Yes, he's one to watch. You know what it is? Sometimes they don't provide a soundbite for something that's going on, but you'll see reaction shots from people, and they put those in there, of course, for a reason. And it's too soon to tell why they're reacting that way. It's probably a little foreshadowing for something that's coming up. But I had a few little asides with him that I kind of went, this is going to be someone who's going to go very far. But they haven't really shown him doing much. He's kind of with the majority. But for some reason, I just get a feeling like that's going to be someone that we need to watch in coming episodes. I don't know. There's something about him I like. I think he's like a subtle version of Tony. And can a subtle version of Tony win the game? That's the big question, though.
Yeah, and that's what's so interesting about all of this is we've seen two episodes now, and I still feel like we haven't gotten much.
No, we haven't gotten much. I think that these two episodes have just been drilling home the theme of millennials versus Gen X. They're really getting into the psychology of that of the, both of those generations, I think. And they're doing it really well while giving us little tiny bits of possible foreshadowing in the process. So I think after this episode, we're going to know where everybody lies. This next episode that's going to air tomorrow, we'll know a little bit more about, we'll have better predictions, I think, after tomorrow's episode for sure. I think that the groundwork has been laid.
So, you know,
I'm sorry to cut you off. It's the debate speaking, but, Adam is the super fan, yes?
He's the guy who yells all the time, right?
Yes, I love him. We haven't seen a lot from him, but what we have seen, he's a super fan. He's got very big, wide eyes. He's kind of like Shirin in that respect, where in the beginning he was Mr. Superfan, loves the show, pointing out everybody's errors that they're making, that they repeated from past seasons. And I think that the isn't there like a 13-year-old there this year? How old is he?
18, Will.
Right. Will said something along those lines, another super fan. And I think that for those two individuals, my prediction for them is that they're going to – I know Shirin lasted a long time her first season, but I think that the super fan thing and same thing with Max as well. I think Max would have been a really great player if he was able to get the stars of his out of his eyes that he was in front of Jeff Probst and at Tribal Council. And I think he would have been a better player if he were able to bypass that, or if he were, you know, voted into the second chance of season. But I did have a point somewhere in there. I had a point, the 18. Yeah. So I think that the super fans are, I like Adam. I think that his energy is great and I like his reactions. I think that we're going to hear a lot more of him and I think he makes it pretty far. I hope he makes it pretty far. I don't know, but I think that he's, his downfall may be the fact that he's a huge Survivor fan in this respect. I think that, his eyes are a little too wide right now, and he's not playing the game probably the way that he should at this point. But from the previews of next week, I remember seeing this. He voted for Adam voted for Figgy. Yes, I'm trying to remember.
I don't believe so.
No, I got a little confused there.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But let's.
I know that. Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, let's talk about you know, the other characters. That there's only one other real character to talk about here, right? Last week I mentioned Chris as having a really good edit, and he sort of disappeared from the episode as well. He's like the red-haired Trace Adkins type character.
Yes, agreed. He disappeared in this season, but in the second episode, but in the first episode, he was my first crush before I saw.
Ken.
But I liked the ginger. I like that dude. He's a I don't know if that's a derogatory term towards redheads, but I like me a ginger once in a while. And he is he's definitely – who did he remind me of? He reminded me of a little bit of Scott from a recent season. I got a Scott vibe from him from – oh, God, I'm drawing a blank. I knew that this would happen. Scott from this last season, Ty and.
Oh yeah, yeah, the professional basketball player.
Him, yes.
Yes,
I'm getting a vibe like that. That he's, you know, he knows he can be in control. He is a little bit in control. He's behind Paul a little bit, letting Paul be the loud one. Same thing that Scott did. He let that other dude be the loud one. God, I don't remember his name. Some super fan I am, huh? but yeah. Oh, God, what was his name? The Bounty Hunter.
Yes, the Bounty Hunter.
Okay. So, yeah, I see similarities there. I see that Chris is going to, you know, they introduced us to him, and I think that he's gonna come back full force later on. They gave us a good impression of him, so we know that something good's going to happen with him, or we hope.
Yeah, and as much as I like Cece, she wasn't really in the episode either, so I think the only character left to really talk about here is Zeke. What do you make of Zeke? What do you make of Zeke's edit? Because Zeke is continuing to get this edit that he's becoming things he never expected to be, right? This week it was the fire, that he never expected to be the person to start the fire on Survivor and save his tribe.
Mm-hmm. Well... I think that Zeke has a lot that hasn't been revealed yet. That's kind of the feeling that I get about Zeke. I love Zeke instantly. I think that there's a lot going on there, and I think that he's got a lot of great things to say. And when he talks about this being a transformative experience, it hit me, because that's kind of. I mean, I'll be the first person that my tribe would actually murder if I was cast on the show, I think. But with Zeke, when I hear him talk about how he wants to bring the best part of himself to the game, to me that was like I got a lump in my throat. That's what I crave on Survivor. I want that experience. I want to be able to, you know, go out there and transform into something that I didn't know I'd become, and like I want something like that, and you know. That, for me, would be the ideal scenario to do that. However, I know my strengths and my weaknesses, and I think that that would be a big mistake. But I think that Zeke is I'm along for the ride. I want to see what becomes unearthed by, you know, his experience out there. There's something about him that's so brilliantly unique and unlike anyone we've ever seen on the show. And I think that his sort of, I could be wrong, I don't know, but the way that he speaks, people, he's got an energy about him that reminds me in a sense of Ty. There's this sort of, just a positivity that exudes from him. And he knows that he's out there to backstab and, you know, and play this game as hard as he possibly can, but he's reveling in every second of it as well. Like, he's not forgetting that this is something that is going to change his life forever. I'm just happy to go along for the ride and see where he goes with this. I think I think that he's one to watch too.
Yeah, and I think you picked out the two keys here about Zeke. The first is the word transformation, and what that word means in regards to him. And I think it'll be interesting to see what that means going forward, because that leads into the second thing. Is this edit of his, is this more of a tie edit, as you said, or is this more of a Cochran edit? Because, of course, when Cochran won, Cochran had the transformation edit, where he finally became the Survivor player he wanted to be. I'll always remember with Cochran him climbing up the rock wall on the reward. Right. And that was sort of like the moment where it was like, okay, it's obvious he's going to win at this point. And that's the question. Is this just another where Zeke's the big character and we're going to hide the winner behind him like we did last season? Or is Zeke actually the winner? And I'm not asking you to answer that question. I'm just sort of saying, You know, that's what we have to watch going forward in the season, and we have to watch that in relation to the theme of millennial versus Gen X and sort of more pragmatic, practical playing versus more emotional playing, because the person who got voted out this week, you know, as she said, she got sniped from a mile away with that boom headshot because she was playing more pragmatically. So,
yeah, he's someone, Zeke is someone that I wouldn't mind if he didn't win this game, because there are people who I feel are really playing to win, and I would be happy with a Zeke win even after two episodes. I would be happy with a Zeke win, but I think he's going to fall into that category of, I got through the experience, I changed profoundly from it, now I'm going to fucking play this game and I'm going to win it. So I think that, you know, if he were to return in an upcoming season, I think that's when the gameplay is going to start for him. For right now, I'm along for the ride and I enjoy what I'm seeing of him as a human being. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up for this episode of our Survivor podcast here in the Midside. So, George, I want to thank you for coming on. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, you're an actor. So is there anywhere people can check out your work? Are there any projects you want to highlight?
Yeah, I have this dog and pony show in the circus. No, I'm a working actor. I've been on Jimmy Kimmel Live. I've done a couple of little things, bits there, here and there. And I do a bunch of independent films that are actually right now in touring in the independent film circuit throughout the country and in certain parts of the world. One film is called Second Chance. I play a ill-fated dad, and that's one project that I have coming up. The other project that I have coming up or is touring right now is a movie called Forever Into Space. And you can check me out on IMDb if you really gave a shit. My reel is on there. You can see me act like a fool and try to get work to pretend. It's fun. I like to act. It makes my 9-to-5 bearable. So I'm a working actor who also has a 9-to-5. I keep busy.
I think that's true of a lot of us artists. And I personally think you're talented. I think you're a pretty funny guy. I think you're pretty funny comedic actor, so I hope you get more roles going forward in the future like that.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I hope it happens.
And thank you for coming on the show. And as you mentioned pretty much near the top, we'll see what happens next week. We'll see if it's a switch. Well, it'll be this week when people are hearing this episode, so we'll see what happens on the next episode. I personally don't think it's a switch. I think they're just going to send like one or two millennials over to the Gen X camp and vice versa. They've done that in previous seasons before, like the kidnapping thing, or just sort of live there for a day just to give people a view of what's going on the other side. Although a twist this early, a switch wouldn't be unprecedented, as we saw in like Cook Islands where they had the tribes go down. But I think that's what we'll see going forward. I've really enjoyed talking to you today.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. Look for more episodes in the future. And as always, you can check out our flagship show, as I mentioned at the top. You'll find it on themidside.com, or you can subscribe on iTunes or any other podcast streaming service such as Stitcher. This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.